Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Gentlemen, another weekend gone in the World Cup 2015. How do we feel?
As an Englishman, I don't feel great.
And you, Bruno?
Well, as a Welshman, obviously happy that Wales have made it through to quarterfinals.
And very shortly you'll find out exactly what I think. Welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB, sitting in the absence of Tim, who is at the NFL this afternoon, and I'm here with statistical genius, Philip.
Hi JB.
And the man coming off the bench guaranteed to make even more of an impact than Danny Cipriani in a Mercedes, Bryn Williams.
Hi JB.
Oh, boys.
Hell of an introduction for Bryn.
Well,
yeah, I'll take that.
We have got a bit of a habit now of giving Bryn a massive introduction and hello Phil or yeah. Hello JB. So I thought I'd just keep the tradition going, so to say.
Deservedly so as well.
Very much appreciated.
Good to have you here, Bryn.
Thank you.
So, people are feeling a little bit different from last weekend then? Or actually, probably not. You're probably feeling exactly the same as last weekend.
Yeah, this time last Sunday, I was a little bit hungover and a little bit depressed, and I'm probably about the same.
Come on then, Phil. Tell us about your little jaunt to the capital at the behest of our friends at Canterbury.
Well, first of all, ignoring the scoreline, I had a brilliant day. So, Canterbury provided the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast with two tickets. Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on the result, Tim and JB, neither of you could make it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a spare ticket. And Tim very wisely said, you'll get some credit in the bank with your missus if you offer her the ticket first.
And did it work?
Well, my girlfriend, as you know, has no interest at all about rugby. She's not bothered. Or sports in general. And so when I offered her the ticket on Thursday night, I kind of undersold the whole thing. I sold her the negative side. I said, "We're gonna have to pay for a hotel down in London. That's gonna be 150 quid.
You're
gonna
have to easily pay at least
100 quid train fare for yourself down to London. We're gonna have to go down there. Just want to go to watch rugby all day. Get involved in the atmosphere. It's a big game. There's loads of people I know who would really appreciate the ticket. So really, kind of selling the negative side.
Did she call you a bluff?
She absolutely 100% caught my bluff.
Oh, that'd be lovely, Philip.
And was delighted to take the ticket.
Did she enjoy herself, though?
To my obvious delight as well. It was wonderful to have her along.
So you and the lovely Claire went to Twickenham then?
We did.
How was it?
We had a good day in London, and then we had... Well, you can read all about it on my little blog that will be on Canterbury New Zealand's website, which I suggest everyone read about. But it was... It was good. It was impressive. We arrived a couple of hours before kickoff, and the atmosphere was incredible. There was a bit of a buzz. There was thousands of people, both Australian and England fans.
Do you know what? I think rugby have finally got the whole match day atmosphere thing right. It started with like Scotland doing medieval battle reenactments and losing every game. And I think Wales kind of got involved with all the fire. But I love the whole, we'll black out the stadium, spotlights. I think it looks awesome. I even think it's getting to at least and maybe even beyond what is offered at the NFL.
Well, I mean, that's high praise indeed.
It's important because not everyone's a massive rugby fan, so it's important to make it a big spectacle, to make it entertaining, and that's going to draw people from outside of traditional rugby followers.
Yeah.
Now, although the actual spectacle of Twickenham was entertaining, how was the rugby? Because I think we've all seen this, and I'm afraid to say, As much as I hate to see England go out, I do love being right.
I don't think England were terrible by any stretch. I think they were a little bit naive, in particular around the breakdown. And, I mean, talking beforehand, we've said so often, with Hooper and Pocock, Pooper, playing, they're going to boss the breakdown. They're going to be first over the ball. They're not necessarily always going to steal it, but they're going to slow the ball right down. And that is exactly what they did. They didn't always steal the ball, but the amount of time it took for England to recycle the ball was just completely unacceptable. It allowed the defence to get into position, and it gave England's attack no hope, no opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, rugby's a simple game, and if you can generate quick ball,
yeah,
it makes everything easy. You know, the English halfbacks were struggling because they had such poor quality ball, and Pocock and Hooper were always going to offer that threat of the breakdown, you know, and England just didn't challenge it.
Yeah.
Robshaw didn't get close to making a turnover himself. I don't think there was one turnover from Jacqueline for England in the whole game.
Maybe one or two. Yeah.
The more I'm thinking about it, the more of an utter disaster it actually is. I mean, the Australia score at the end, I think maybe might have been a little inflated because, of course, you had the two yellow cards. But actually, you know, it probably was about right, because you've got to remember that Folau missed that pass to the wing when he got hit by Mike Brown. God knows how he missed it.
Yeah, he had so much time.
I know. And then he goes up for a high ball, and he's the best in the world at getting the high ball. He misses that.
Yeah, it could have been
two scores there.
Two scores in the first 5 minutes that they left out there.
Australia were ruthless, weren't they? They took their chances, and that is a mark of a very good team in the making.
First half, the number of line breaks was very similar.
Yeah.
But Australia, Foley, converted both of them, and England didn't quite. Not only did they not convert them, but they'd make that initial break and then immediately get turned over because the support wasn't there.
That's exactly right. In the middle third of the field, England looked so dangerous. They got to the Australian 22 on numerous occasions off first phase ball. You know, Anthony Watson, JJ, both looked really dangerous. But as soon as they got to the 22, they might have had a couple of phases where they sent some big carriers up the middle. But as soon as Pocock or Hooper got their chance, they slowed it down or turned it over.
Yeah.
As soon as Australia got on the England 22...
Points on the board.
Yeah, they got quick ball and they just cut England apart.
That second try Australia scored was a thing of beauty. It'd bring a tear to a brave man's eye. It was just magnificent.
Perfect execution, wasn't it?
It really was.
Yeah, the timing of each pass, the drawing the defenders, drawing the last man. It was... It's just the simple skills, the basics done very, very well.
Let me ask you then, Phil, as an Englishman, are England that far off the mark, or were Australia exceptional?
I think it's a bit of both. I think Australia were exceptional.
Yeah.
I think Bernard Foley was absolutely outstanding. He 100% kicking off the tee. He scored two tries. He made a try-saving tackle on Watson when he broke through from a good England move. England, particularly in the first half, I didn't think they were that far off. They were very unlucky to go in so far down and not actually have a try themselves. But then in the second half, they kind of imploded a little bit. And their scrum and their line-out, which had both been solid in the first half, fell to pieces. They were making half breaks, not finishing them off, turning the ball over. The Anthony Watson chip straight into touch when England were getting back in contention.
Oh, that was tragic. Anthony Watson is one of the few players to come out of this with any praise whatsoever.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the other one as well. Farrell. I think Farrell has had a magnificent tournament.
Agreed.
Now, there's a slight problem, which is he's not as good a playmaker as Ford. But where do you stand on this theory? I thought today, I think Farrell is the closest thing England have got currently to Johnny Wilkinson.
Yep.
But Johnny Wilkinson wasn't always a great playmaker. He always had Cat with him, or he had
Greenwood was a playmaker.
Yeah, he always had other playmakers around helping him out. England didn't do anything until they had Ford and Farrell.
Yeah,
and it just feels to me like good as Farrell is, they really needed Ford, and without him, where is the creativity?
Well, you look at the Australian team and having Foley and Gitto, having two playmakers, two kickers, it takes so much pressure off the 10, having another man who can do both jobs. And England, with Barrett, as good as his defensive qualities are, that is the limit of his game.
Here is what Barrett basically is. He's a very good tackler in a narrow channel. And I think seeing what he's done in this World Cup, He's either not the same player that he was, and he wasn't always that good anyway to start with. But I'm going to go as far as to say, if there's a new coach that comes in, he's done. I don't think there's any more international appearances for Brad Barrett.
No, I mean, he didn't offer any offensive threat, did he, Barrett?
No.
You know, if Gitto's playing 12, Gitto's a fantastic player, but you've got to target his channel. Him and Foley, they have to send big runners down, and they just didn't.
Yep.
You know, they didn't ask questions of Gitto and Foley in defence, did they?
That's another good point, because you can target that narrow channel.
Of course you can.
And if England had good fit ball-carrying forwards, they could have really used that, but Morgan, he did not appear fit to me. No. And then they've not really got any other big carriers in the pack.
Exactly, and Tom Wood's come in for a ton of stick, and probably rightly so. I mean, I said in the last podcast, I think he looks like he loses his head slightly. But on the other hand, Robshaw's not doing much. I mean, Robshaw and Wood are basically the same player on either side of the scrum.
Yeah.
And Morgan just doesn't help out enough.
I think Morgan's not fit. I think he's been forced.
Why is he there?
Why
is he there?
Billy Vunipola wasn't fit. He was fit enough to play, but he's nowhere near it.
But wouldn't you rather an honest coach that goes out there and get... I mean, England have got plenty of number eights. They might not be as good as a fully fit Ben Morgan, but if he's not fully fit, why wouldn't you go with, I don't know, whoever it would be?
Well, Easter.
Or an Easter or a Waldrum. Or anyone who is fully fit and will work.
Yeah.
It's a very strange decision.
Do you get the feeling that England are caught between two stools almost? Are they trying to play that power game? You know, the Barrett and they've used Burrell in the past, and obviously now they've got the guy from rugby league, Sam Burgess. But are they caught between two stools trying to use that power game, or are they trying to play the expansive game, which they sort of opened up with Ford and JJ in the Six Nations? What are they trying to achieve? And it just looked like they were caught without any answers.
I've said this previously, that I think Stuart Lancaster's gone out there and got the widest skill set of a squad possible. So he's got like the best defender, he's got the fastest guy, the best playmaker, etc., etc. There's no continuity. If one of those guys goes down, you've got to reshuffle everything. And the other thing I don't get about Stuart Lancaster's selection is see if you can disagree with this, which you almost certainly can. But if you go out there and you're winning a game, you may as well just continue with the same philosophy and the same principles, because you're winning and you're just going to score more points if it's quite an attack-minded approach. I don't understand why anyone would bring another player on to go more defensive. If you're going to make changes, you want to go more attacking because you're probably chasing the game. And Stuart Lancaster always seems to go for a more defensive option if one is readily available. It's a very, very strange thing which he does.
The more his tenure has gone on, he seems to have got more and more pragmatic.
Do you think?
Because if you think back 3 years ago, he started trying to look at expansive options. Like, let's not forget, JJ was only in the England side because of an injury at the start of the Six Nations.
Mm.
And he's just gone more and more pragmatic and gone into his shell. And last week against Wales was, let's be honest, that's where they've failed.
Yeah.
You know, they should have won last week, but...
But I just don't understand, right? Say if you've got a bench and you've got Burgess on it and you've got Wigglesworth, what do you expect those guys to do? Do you expect them to come on and score 20 points?
Yeah.
I just don't see what option it is. Why didn't he look at bringing on Slade? Why didn't he have Kerr on the bench?
Well, someone like Noel.
Yeah,
someone like Noel who can actually offer an attacking option off the bench, cover several positions.
It seems so negative to have these options on the bench to close off a game.
Yeah.
You know, it's like bringing on an extra centre back.
But that wasn't where it was lost.
No.
I mean, so let's talk about the aftermath. So we talked about the game.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a bit about the aftermath, because there's a lot of stuff.
I don't even know where it is.
there's a lot of question marks over Stuart Lancaster's future. First of all, let's start with Lancaster. Bryn, would you keep him? If you were the RFU, would you say, right, you've got a contract till 2020, I think it is, after the next World Cup, would you keep him or would you let him go?
So last night after the game, I actually felt really, really sorry for Stuart Lancaster and Chris Robshaw and all the England players. I thought, you know, they're good guys. They're obviously I know JB will laugh about engendering this culture, etc. But they have obviously trying to foster this role model approach to rugby and trying to.
It's nonsense.
They're trying to be sort of good guys and take away from what happened in 2011. So last night I thought, let's give Lancaster another crack up to the next World Cup and see if he can do what Clive Woodward did. But this morning, watched the game back, thought about it, and I just thought, no. He's had 3 years to get England to where they are now, and they're no further down the line. Look at teams like Wales in 2008. Gatlin came in, immediately won the Grand Slam. Yeah. England have been a developing team for 3 years. How long do you need to develop for?
It is a nonsense.
Joe Schmidt, 1 year won the Six Nations. This is the best one. Won the Rugby Championship.
12 months ago, right, Australia were basically a bunch of misogynistic, fat-shaming drunks.
Yeah.
1 year on, they look like World Cup
the real
finals.
Deal, don't they? Yeah.
The same guys involved, I mean, okay, actually, James O'Connor's not around, and, you know, he was too intoxicated to get on a plane, allegedly. But, you know, Curtly Beale's still involved.
Yeah.
You know,
I think Lancaster's done is absolute level best, but I don't think he's got another... He's taken England as far as he possibly can.
The other one, you mentioned Clive Woodward, because he failed in 99, and then he was given another 4 years, built and won the World Cup. Graham Henry did the same. He failed in 2007.
But this isn't a man. Lancaster's not a man with a CV which is fit for international coaching.
Yeah.
It just isn't there. It's not like he's got a handful of Heineken Cups, a league title. He did well with Leeds. He went to coach some kids. He then became... England coach. It doesn't stack up to me at all.
I certainly don't want to kick a man while he's down, which Lancaster obviously is going to be. You know, he's down, and I'd imagine he's going to resign after the Uruguay game, given his personality and given what sort of personality he's got. I just can't see him not. He's going to fall on his sword.
I can see that. It does appear to be the honourable thing to do. He's taken, in my opinion, it looks like he's taken them as far as he can go.
But I think they've probably gone backwards looking at it now, because they're making all the right noises, and they did well occasionally. But he's done well occasionally with one of the deepest playing pools in the world, with the most money in the world. And actually, I think he's the first England coach not to get out of the group stage, and then has a record loss at home to Australia. That's pretty bad.
In that respect, you're right, if you look at those cold, hard facts. But I don't think he has taken them backwards, because England were on the cusp of being a very, very good team. In the Six Nations, you know, they looked like... I really thought they were carrying a bit of momentum into this World Cup.
Yeah.
But he's had a horrendous failure, because the writing, you know, the signs were there that the pack was creaking, that the breakdown was going to be an issue in the build-up games, and nothing. It's not been addressed, has it? He's not changed the way England play their rugby.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, they've only got one backs move. I saw it last night. It kind of worked.
No, I thought they used a couple of good backs moves. I thought they showed a bit of variety.
In between the 22s, they looked dangerous.
Yeah, they showed a bit more variety than they have done previously.
Ultimately, I'm not sure any England team picked from any players available could have beaten that Australia team. But that's not why they've not qualified. It's because they messed up against Wales.
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely.
And that's the key one. They had to win. I think Australia now are real favourites for this tournament. Like, they're right up there with New Zealand as favourites for this tournament.
Completely agree.
They
but
have to be.
England threw it away. We've spoke about it at great length on two podcasts, but they lost this World Cup against Wales.
Even now, if they'd have taken the draw now, they'd be sitting on, 8 points? And Wales would be relying on getting some sort of point from the Australian game.
Yes. Yeah.
So, I can't imagine Wales are going to restrict Australia on Saturday. You know, they're not going to stay within 7 points.
Well, yeah. That's a really interesting point. Where do we think Wales are going to go with Australia next weekend?
Well, there's one or two ways of looking at it. I was talking to Phil before we came on air. I can't see Gatland picking a full strength side.
No. You think he's going to just kind of let that game pass and go for the big win against South Africa?
I think he might tinker up front, but I don't think tinker to weaken the side. I think Paul James has to come in to try and shore up the scrum. Yeah. Samson Lee needs game time, and probably Ken Owens will start to see if that, more for the quarterfinal than anything else, if that can sort out the Welsh scrum. I think he's going to have to go probably to Purick, and maybe with Lydia in the back row and try and really counteract what Pocock and Hooper are doing.
So Purick and Lydia, not Purick and Warburton.
See, I wouldn't be surprised if he rested Warburton.
Oh, I see.
But I don't know which. If it was me, I'd like to see Wales go gun squad and try and win the group. You know, let's see what happens, because if you win the group, it makes reaching a final a realistic target. Yeah. I mean, still a lot of work to do, whoever they have to get past. But if they finish second, they've got to go South Africa, New Zealand.
Yes.
You know, but equally, Australia aren't going to want to go that route either. So I don't think Wales are going to beat Australia. So from my point of view, I would rest a couple of the big players.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with that.
I can understand that point of view. I'd go with that. But just going back to, before we go on to like the future fixtures, just going back to England for a second at the future.
Well, actually, Phil, just before you go back to England, why don't we listen to what Tim thinks about England?
Okay.
Okay, so before we recorded this podcast, I got an email from our good friend Tim, who wanted to have a say, even though he's at the NFL. So I'll just plug him in.
Hello, boys. Tim here. Sorry I can't be on the podcast. Hello to you listening. I wanted to have my say as much as anything. Sorry, I've lost my voice a little bit from shouting last night. As much as anything, I wanted to create a little bit of balance from JB's ranting and Lancaster baiting, which kind of sounds like a really weird, rude sex act now. But anyway, moving on. Right, I'm as dejected as any England fan, but I just reckon in the cold light of day, we should just acknowledge this England team was never, ever going to win the World Cup, was it? Let's be honest. Was never going to win the World Cup. And I think the perfect illustration of that was the fact we came up against in Australia six guys who had on or around 100 caps. People like Stephen Moore and Matt Gitto and Hoops and Pocock and all the rest of it. We don't have anybody like that. And even, you know, JB loves to get his tiny violin out and moan about Wales' injury crisis. They still had five guys with massive experience in their starting 15, experience that we just don't have. And I've got a brilliant analogy for you, boys. I think you'll like this. Now, I'm a radio presenter by trade. And by the way, imagine having to watch that England performance and then also having to see adverts for the guy who nicked your job in the middle of it. I had to watch those Chris Moyles adverts. So, you know, spare a thought. And my analogy is, if the England squad were made up of bands, not players, then we've got a load of trendy young bands with hipster haircuts, well, basically like haircuts like New Zealand rugby players have, but we don't have anybody that's like Rolling Stones or Pink Floyd or the Beatles or the Who or anyone like that. We're unproven. This is a World Cup too soon, but we've got big players with a big future and big talent. I will talk about JB's favourite topic, Stuart Lancaster, in a second. But in terms of players, Wood, Robshaw, rabbits in the headlights. We can't trust a hooker to throw to the back of the line out. Joe Marler, who I've been talking up, was an embarrassment. I've never seen him play that poorly. But on the subject of Lancaster, I think he's got a lot of credit to his name. He's done well against Southern Hemisphere teams, better than Warren Gatland. He's done okay in Six Nations tournaments, only lost one game every year, never won one, but okay, he's done all right. And he's turned around a bad environment and created a good environment. But, and here's the but, I can't understand his thinking. He still doesn't know his best team. He picked George Ford in all the warm-up games, but then played Owen Farrell when it mattered most against Australia and Wales. I don't mind the selection. I don't understand the thinking to not know your best team and not have your best playing philosophy nailed at a World Cup is unforgivable. Michael Checker was in the same position a couple of months ago. He didn't know what his back row was going to be, but he's decided his philosophy. He's decided his team. We got what we deserved, and we deserved what we got. But all the people saying this is the lowest moment in English rugby, absolute rubbish. Andy Robinson, Martin Johnson were way worse. The reason we're out at the pool stage is because of the way the pools were decided, not because this is a particularly bad England team. It's made of good players, but it's a World Cup too soon. I'm gutted as anyone. And there you go. I just wanted to have my say. All right, I'm going to go and eat cold leftover curry and cry.
So, that's Tim's view on the World Cup, which is interesting because not content with being wrong for 2 years, he wants to be wrong for a further 4 years. Very interesting point of view, but I suppose you've got to back yourself.
Well, he was saying there's some very talented players there, which I think we all agree with.
Yeah.
They undoubtedly are. But Lancaster probably hasn't got the best out of them. Now, I think all three of us would say it is probably now time for Lancaster to go, isn't it?
Yeah, now Who would you replace him with? Or should I ask a different question? Has he already been replaced?
Well, the question I was going to ask before was, what would you do with the other coaches' staff? So, Graham Rowntree's good reputation, but England scrum and line out of
yeah, it's in tatters, that reputation.
Yeah, agreed. I think you've got to replace Rowntree.
Yep.
I think you've got to do something different with the forwards.
I think you have to. I have to think you change the entire coaching staff.
Well, I think it depends who you bring in. Because if you bring in someone English, looking at probably Malinder or Baxter.
Baxter, yeah.
Then have they got the calibre of coaching staff around them at the moment to like completely bring in, say, the Exeter team? Or would you want to leave, say, maybe Cat or Farrell?
Well, do you know what? Cat and Farrell have never been head coaches in their own right. Or if they have, it's kind of like being underneath a director of rugby who's very active.
Yes.
So with Farrell, it is underneath Dr. Brendan, and later McCall. And with Cat, it was with... Was it Gary... Not Gary Gold. Who was he with?
London Irish.
Yeah. I can't remember. Am I being... Toby Booth.
Booth.
Right. So they're not actually main men. I have got a really left field suggestion for England coach, and it will never happen, and I'm happy to be laughed out of the room. I'm not happy to be laughed out of the room, just the record. I think Steve Diamond would do wonders with that team. He's so unprofessional.
As a head coach, or are you saying as a forwards coach? Or?
Oh, do you know what? Either. I really think I mean,
I could see us having some merit as like a forwards coach coming in.
Yeah.
But he does so much with so little at Sale. I mean, Sale, with three caps in their squad, managed to beat Bath with over 100. Sorry, in their pack.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just these little things over and over again. But don't get me wrong, this is not a serious suggestion.
I think England have to go for tried and tested, proven international coaches.
But who, though?
Would you go non-English?
Yeah, absolutely. At the moment, I think you'd have to. You could possibly bring someone like Baxter in alongside someone with an eye to the future. But for me, I'd be going to try and break the bank, get someone like Eddie Jones involved.
No, he's already signed elsewhere, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's just signed for the Stormers, hasn't he?
But there are ways and means of getting people out of contracts. England, you know, they're not short of money. They went, you know, let's not forget, they put Lancaster in as an interim coach.
Yeah, and do you know what? 1 year into a six-year deal... What is that about?
I know, the six-year deal, I mean, we questioned it at the time. It was announced, 9 months before a World Cup.
Brilliant.
It just doesn't make sense, really, does it? And now looking back, it only makes sense if you say, well, this World Cup doesn't matter, we're building for the next one.
That's nonsense.
Yeah, there's no such thing as the next World Cup.
I never want to hear that off anyone ever again, ever.
You know, World Cups are their own cycles. You can't say they're building for the next World Cup.
Or the World Cup's too soon. No, get out of here.
Look at how far Australia have come in a year.
Yeah, I know. Part of me, I do recognise it's perhaps a World Cup too soon. That doesn't excuse not getting out of the group at all.
Yeah.
But for, I think it was either 24 or 26 of the 31-man squad, that was their first World Cup. Most of the guys are stuck between the 20-30 cap mark. So you've got no one even close to 100 caps. I mean, Haskell and Ben Youngs are the most experienced players.
But who do you see out of that squad, particularly out of that pack, being around at the next World Cup?
I think Marla
will be.
Marla. I mean, they might all be, to be fair.
Jamie George will be.
It'd be easy to say who won't be.
Morgan and Vunipola will be. Atwood and Cruis, Atwood weren't in the squad, but those boys will be. There's a lot of guys who are kind of between 23 and 28 who have definitely got another World Cup, and by the time you get to the next World Cup, they'll have another 50 caps under the belt.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of... I think there are calls in the press for just wholesale changes right across the board. I mean, it's one place I saw Mauro Itoje captaining the
Six
Nations.
Yeah.
Which is just insanity. I think Rubshaw should stay as captain. I think he will... This kind of tournament will teach him more than a successful and gallant loss in the semi-finals would ever teach him. So I think you've got to stick with the majority of the players. But I do agree with Jay. I think Lancaster has reached the end of his capabilities, and I think some of the other coaches have as well. And I think it's time to get in a new coaching setup.
Now, do you want to talk briefly about what we've just seen on Twitter?
We can talk briefly. I wouldn't want to put
Because too I wouldn't want to put too much weight behind it, because it's all allegation, sorry, speculation and rumour, conjecture, which I know you love, JB.
Hear, hear.
So there's a Twitter account called Inferno Sports, which has been tweeting some comments that were allegedly made partly by Billy Vunipola, but partly by some of the England, the other England players and England team. The Billy Vunipola comments was regarding not knowing about the bonus point in the Fiji win, because they'd never been told about it.
No way.
Which I...
That is outrageous.
I find it hard to believe, but if it is true, that it is outrageous.
Yeah.
He also had a comment about Stuart Lancaster doesn't do any coaching. Farrell is the one who coaches. And then there's some further allegations that...
Well, that's
Farrell
unusual.
Is,
that's Farrell, fairly usual for...
Yeah. That is not unusual, but then there's further allegations about Farrell picking the team. It's Farrell who was instrumental in Burgess being there. Lancaster wanted to keep Burrell in the team. And that Farrell has been controlling things a lot more than perhaps... what is Farrell's role? Is he backs coach or defence coach?
He's backs coach. Attack coach, he is.
Is he attack
coach?
Well,
what's Mike Catt then?
Is he defence coach?
Because I thought Mike Catt would have been backs and attack and Farrell on defence.
Either way, it's saying that Farrell has been the controlling influence.
But you know what the moral of the story here is? Don't have a coaching setup with people in the setup who are significantly tougher than you.
Well,
yeah, that's alarming to hear. But I mean, I know hindsight's a wonderful thing, but we've discussed Luther Burrell, and he just now is plainly a better 12 than either of the guys who were actually playing yesterday.
It's
obvious, isn't it? A lot of England's best performances, I mean, think about New Zealand tour last year. You know, he played well there, didn't he? Mm. He ran over Wales a couple of times.
Yeah.
And then last week, you just had two blunt objects in the centres. And it's plainly obvious that Burrell should have been there. So that's a glaring mistake from Lancaster. And if that's been led by Farrell, then...
If that is true, more fool Lancaster for letting it happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, agreed.
He deserves everything he gets.
Agreed.
So, was there any other rugby this weekend?
Good question.
Anyone watch South Africa, Scotland?
I was travelling to Twickenham at the time. I was trying to get it streaming on my phone, but every time I managed to get a steady internet signal, ITV want to show me half a dozen adverts. So I never actually saw a single second of the game.
I watched the first half after our game in South Wales yesterday, and then missed the second half. But Scotland, it was a good game. But
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I thought South Africa looked impressive.
Yeah. I nearly picked Scotland for this on the basis that Finn Russell might be playing. And actually, Weir did very, very well.
Yeah.
But he's not Finn Russell.
Yeah.
And I was kind of disappointed. I mean, the score which South Africa put on Scotland is disproportionate to the stature of both the teams. I really thought Scotland would do slightly better. And because they let me down so badly, I really want Japan to go through now.
I do. I watched the Japan Samoa game in a pub in Bloomsbury. And about 10 minutes into the game, a massive Japanese group, like about 15 Japanese fans, all walked in and started watching. It was brilliant. It created because there was a big bunch of Aussies, a few Kiwis, a load of Brits in there, and then this big bunch of Japanese tourists
now,
came in.
What are Japanese fans like? Are they boozy or they're obnoxious? They throw stuff. I mean,
no, I wouldn't. They don't have any of those traits.
No, I don't imagine that they do.
Very happy, very respectful. They love Goromaru.
Yeah,
the 15.
Gurumaru.
Every time he came on, the girls were swooning. The guys were swooning.
He's a hell of a player. He's not playing in Super Rugby, is he? He is
as far as I know, he's
locked
just
up in Japan somewhere.
Yeah, just playing in Japan. I wouldn't be surprised if he got offered a contract somewhere else because he's handy with the ball going forward. He's a hell of a kicker.
And he's 16 stone as well.
He's quite a big boy. Toulon have just lost a kicking fullback for 6 months, haven't they?
Oh, they'll be delighted about that. Absolutely delighted.
They could bring Goromaru in.
Anyone watch Georgia, Argentina?
Georgia, New Zealand.
What did I just say? Yep, sorry.
Georgia, New Zealand. On the Friday.
Yeah.
I did. And I was a little bit disappointed with the All Blacks, but very pleased with the way that Georgia played.
I've got a sneaky suspicion, All Blacks are going to go out before the final.
Really? Who to?
I don't know. I think they could easily trip up against the French, cliche. But I think if they see Australia, in fact, I think they're there for the taking. I really do.
I think it's all gearing up for an All Blacks Australia final.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's probably the home nation's team in the best shape is Ireland.
Yeah,
they've never got to a
but
semi.
They didn't look very impressive today against Italy.
No, they didn't, which is a bit strange. I was fully expecting Ireland to blow Italy by 20-30 points because Italy have been very poor.
Yeah,
and Ireland, albeit they've who they played
Canada. They put a big score on Canada. I thought, and then Romania. I thought they were looking good, Ireland. I mean, that's their first real test today.
Yeah.
And it's a good warm-up for France.
It is. But they've still not quite...
clicked.
Not quite clicked. And not quite settled their team, I don't think. Because they had Keith Earls playing outside centre with Henshaw. That was his first game.
Yep.
They had Dave Carney on the wing and Zeebo at 15. You just think, that's probably not the starting team.
You know what is a travesty? That Ireland aren't out of third gear and they're 3 from 3 in their pool. England have played 3 massive games and they're out. That group of death it's embarrassing that there's a group like that put together, in my opinion.
It is. Well, it's because it was selected 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's 4 quarter finalists in that group.
Exactly. It was the seedings 3 years ago.
It's like going out for a meal and ordering your food 2 weeks before you arrive in the restaurant. How do you know that that's what you want?
Yeah.
3 years ago, completely different teams.
And 3 years ago, Fiji were all over the place.
They've
since then got a lot of stability and they won the Pacific Nations Cup this year. They're the best performing Pacific Nations team before this tournament, and they've lost.
Well, if you look at
three,
it,
lost three.
They had, you know, Australia, who are the current rugby championship champions.
Yeah.
Fiji, who won the
Pacific Nations Cup,
and England and Wales, who finished effectively joint top of the Six Nations.
Yeah, because they all only lost one game.
I mean, Ireland won it on points difference, but effectively,
yeah,
4 of the best 8 teams in the world,
yeah,
undoubtedly now.
Yeah,
we're in that one group. You know, the IRB got it wrong.
Yeah, 100%. I don't understand why 3 years out is so important, but apparently it is.
Just going back to the Ireland game.
Yeah.
Is this concerning for them ahead of France, or do you think they've got time to settle, build? I mean, their pack struggled a little bit against Italy. Obviously, a very good Italian pack, led by Parise, who was back. Thank God.
Yeah. Well, will they settle? Yeah, they might do. But I also think when they come against France, their tactic of kicking and absorbing pressure back in their D, that's great. But these French are huge and they've got talent. So all you need is a half break here, half break there, and you're tracking back 30, 40 yards. It's a different kind of game.
Ireland struggled traditionally against France. For me personally, I think Ireland will beat them though. I think they've got class throughout the field, and I think Schmidt is a real canny operator. He knows how to get the best out of the Irish team. And back-to-back Six Nations champions, you know, you can't argue that they can rise to the big occasion. I think they might have taken Italy a little bit lightly.
I don't mean
training or in the build-up or anything like that, but I think psychologically they know their test is next week.
Yeah.
So I expect them to be firing on all cylinders.
I completely agree that Schmidt probably slightly under estimated Italy. I mean, he picked his seventh centre pair in seven games. He's still tinkering with the team a little bit, like I mentioned before. And I do think he slightly underestimated them. And they could have had their fingers burnt.
Yeah, they could, absolutely. I mean, they were 7 points ahead and Italy had an attacking line-out, yeah, which they were looking to maul off. And unfortunately, they didn't win the ball. So
Peter Omani getting carded, yeah, with in the last 10 minutes as well. So it was a no-arm charge into a mall.
What is this? I mean, who uses their arms to go into a mall?
No, well, I think it is one of the more dangerous parts of rugby, to be honest.
Oh, it is dangerous. Rugby is dangerous, full stop. But how do you use your arms to go into a mall? I don't understand really.
I don't know the exact law, but it's about control and recklessness, isn't it? I mean, the Hooper charge on Mike, yeah, Brown in the England game, I was astonished that wasn't a yellow card.
Yeah.
He Superman dived over the ruck, so completely off his feet.
Are we talking rucks or malls now?
It was a ruck.
This,
yeah,
was a ruck.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, you get coached, you know, you sight your target, you come nice and low, you drive loads of high, and you're basically not using your arms, because you're using your arms in case you fall forward. You're not grabbing anyone. You're just basically driving upwards, right?
But it's contact with the head. I mean, Nick Williams of Ulster got an 8-week ban,
yeah,
last,
yeah,
year for hitting Patchell. Reese, can't even say his name, God.
Reese Patchell.
Yeah.
And Hooper's, I didn't think, was that dissimilar to that. It was so reckless. Shoulder on head of Mike Brown. He's very lucky there to stay on the field.
They've kind of got the law wrong here, obviously. It shouldn't be about using your arms or not. It should be about avoiding harm. So if you smash into someone's chest, waist, leg, arm, shoulder,
yeah,
that's fine. But if you go near the head, that's on you.
Yes.
And then you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I did think the Hooper, it was a charge, wasn't it? I thought it looked quite bad.
Yeah.
But rucks are even more dangerous than mauls, because at least on the maul you've got all that target area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the ruck, you're going to come under. And
yeah,
then, well, who knows what then? You're very likely to hit someone's head.
Yes. Did you see the best game of the weekend?
Argentina Tonga.
Yeah,
one of the most enjoyable spectacles of rugby I've seen in a long, long time.
Loved it. Both teams wanted to play attacking rugby. Both teams capable of playing attacking rugby.
Yeah.
Both trying to offload, and that Argentinian back three is awesome.
Are getting there. And by the way, Imhoff is a handsome man.
Yeah,
very handsome man.
He can play a bit too.
Argentina are really developing into something. Whether they're going to be good enough to challenge in the championship anytime soon, I doubt it. But they might upset someone in the next round.
I think going into the next round, so they will play they'll play the winner of Ireland v France.
Yeah,
yeah.
Basically, I think they've got a real opportunity there against either of those teams.
Absolutely, absolutely.
They've got a hell of a pack, real solid pack. Very good scrum. Nicolas Sanchez, experienced, good at controlling the game, but can play. And the pace outside. And Cordera as well, the other winger, was superb.
Oh, was he like 21 or something?
Yeah.
He's so steppy.
There's some videos on YouTube, some highlights of him playing in the under-20s World Cup for the past couple of years. And he looks awesome.
I bet he does. Well, I think the locks were like 21 and 22.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is quite impressive for that sort of position.
Considering the Tongan locks are about 37 and 38.
Yeah, is it the oldest average squad according to the commentary team? Or
yeah.
Most of them are over 30?
Yeah, I think the average age was about 31 and a half, something like that.
Yeah, I think they're going to... Well, I think... What have they got now, Tonga? They've got one more game against someone? Is it Namibia?
I will tell you.
Was it Argentina?
Not so fortunate. They play New Zealand.
Oh, right, okay. So they'll win one against Namibia and then go home. So it looks like every one of the Pacific Nations countries are going to have to qualify again for the next World Cup, and they're all going to be in the same group.
Yes. Now, I'm not sure how many qualification spots will be available from that, from the Pacific qualifying group. I would imagine, given that all three of them are playing in this year's tournament, there will be three spaces available.
Hmm.
But one might have to go through the... Is it the repechage?
Oh, yes, I know exactly what you mean.
Where they end up playing home and away.
Yeah, so who did it last time? Was it USA versus...
No, I think it was... Was it Uruguay-Russia?
Russia, yeah, that's right.
Uruguay-Russia in the last one, I think. I could be wrong about that. But you play the home and away about 4 months out from the World Cup.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we've actually got Uruguay coming to Broughton Park next week, so that'll be quite interesting, although not really as much on it as there was on Friday. Right, before we go on, a quick thank you to DHL, the official logistics partner of the Rugby World Cup. DHL, delivering rugby to the world. Our contest was to find the best rugby story which delivers rugby to the world. When Phil logged on today, he was greeted by 1,900 emails. Where have we got to, Phil?
It's been a busy day, JB. I've obviously diligently gone through every single
one. Well, I mean, we simply just split them three ways and did about 700 each, right?
It was that simple.
So we've gone from however many we had to the last three. So what we got?
That was some brilliant... I really enjoyed reading all of these. And obviously, we don't have time to mention all of them. A couple that I enjoyed that didn't make the last three... Adam Moore meeting Jamie Roberts at Creamfields.
That's got to be made up.
Which is a dance music festival near Warrington. God knows what Jamie Roberts was doing there.
I have no idea.
There was David Christiansen meeting Tana Umaga in a urinal near Soldier Field.
Now we're talking.
Wow.
Yes, we always like a story that starts meeting someone in a urinal.
It's always the best ones.
There was Chris Wright following Tim Stimpson around Newquay on a stag do. He said he tried to match him drink for drink and it didn't end very well.
It's a bit creepy.
It is a bit creepy.
Okay.
What percentage are based around alcohol?
A lot.
All the best stories do.
Astonishingly high percentage of these are based around alcohol. My three favourites, and I'll put it to you two.
Yeah.
I've got my favourite, but three favourites that were... There's a lot of them that were very long and very, very good to read, but I've gone for three slightly shorter ones. So Jordan North was in Hong Kong in 2013 watching the Barbars v the Lions, and he met a lot of the players in the hospitality afterwards. So this was the game, obviously, where Scout Brits punched Owen Farrell.
Yeah,
I remember that well.
Yeah,
and he said after a few beers, he told Skalk that he thought it was a cracking punch and asked him why he did it. And Skalk just said he was having a bit of fun.
Let the boys play. I love that.
I mean, there are times when I do think it would be quite fun to punch Owen Farrell. So fair play.
He must have built that up for months and months and months.
Yeah. And there was... Well, the emails come from a chap called Toby Rigdon, but it's signed off by a guy called Frank. So
okay.
I don't know if Frank's his middle name or Toby's his middle name or whoever it is. And it's a few years ago on a night out in Cardiff, started chatting to a rugby fan at the bar. Whilst talking about the Welsh squad for the Six Nations, we got onto the thorny subject of Peel or Phillips for the scrum half. So this would have been about 2009,
yeah,
2008,
yeah.
Well,
hang on, how long?
Yeah, 2008 it would have been. 2008.
How long's Peel been at sale for, or was it sale?
2008 was when they played Phillips and Hook, who were teammates of the Ospreys, or Peel and Stephen Jones, who were at the Scarlets at the time.
So they initially disagreed over Peel or Phillips, but when he wouldn't accept Frank's reasoning that Peel should be Wales scrum half, his argument got more and more forceful. After pointing out Peel's better service and kicking game, and how I thought he was a classical nine, not just a lump who couldn't cut it as a flanker, Frank was gently dragged away by his friends. It turns out he'd been talking to Mike Phillips, and in his drunken state hadn't recognised
him. That
one,
that one wins. I don't care what the next one is, that one's definitely going to win.
So there's that one, and the final one I suggested is from Peachy, Ian Peachy, short but sweet. 5 years ago in Euro Disney, I bumped into Jason Leonard, who was on holiday with Zinzan Brooke and their families. I know this won't win. Regards, Peachy.
That one definitely
that
wins.
That was a great effort, Peachy.
So you've got Scout Brits in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
You've got telling Mike Phillips he thinks Dwayne Peel is a better scrum half. And you've got seen Jason Leonard and Zinzan Brooke.
I love the brutal honesty of it.
In Euro Disney.
Right, okay.
My only issue is not being able to recognise Mike Phillips.
Yeah,
the most handsome rugby man on the planet.
So this was back when he was
Probably was still handsome. Handsome then.
Maybe not quite as famous as he is now.
Who's your favourite, JB?
Do you know what? There's an element of me thinking, could the Mike Phillips one maybe not be real? Because how would you argue? I mean, Mike Phillips is a distinctive looking guy. You know who Mike Phillips is. How would you not know who Mike Phillips is? Especially when you're talking about Mike Phillips.
To Mike Phillips.
Yeah. It's not like he was discussing it with Warren Fury.
You're talking about Mike Phillips' favourite topic, to Mike Phillips, and yet you don't know who he is.
So that I hope that one's true.
I do like that one. I think it's very good. True or not, it's a good story.
And do you know what? If he's made it up, it's an even better story.
Yeah.
And he deserves a ticket. So I'm going to go with... Frank
or Toby Rigdon, whoever you are.
Yeah, is it Frank? We'll email him back and find out. And you've got two tickets to go and watch Wales, who might ironically be playing Mike Phillips.
Yeah, congratulations, Frank.
Congratulations, mate. Okay, have we got anything else to cover off?
Well, I can just run through. So the next pod, looking at the fixtures, is most likely to be Wednesday night, either Wednesday or Thursday, because we've got two games on Tuesday, two games on Wednesday, a break on Thursday, and then the weekend's fixtures.
Yeah.
Now, Jay, you go away for a few days, don't you?
Unfortunately, I do. I've been dragged over to Italy.
That must be hard for you.
Well, it is hard. You know, there's World Cup on. I'm not convinced the coverage in Italy will be as in-depth as here. But fortunately, when I'm over there, there will be a new issue of the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. So I'll get all of my podcasting needs and rugby needs delivered straight to my device. And if I don't, I can always check out at Rugby Podcast on Twitter.
Oh, they've got some very good insight into rugby on there.
Superb. Or if you want some even better insight, check out Jay Beardmore on Twitter.
Have you got a Twitter handle, Bryn?
I have. At Bryno Williams.
Bryno Williams. Very good. Yeah.
Yours is shut down about 2 years ago for some reason.
I had one, but I was never really using it, so I closed it down.
So the answer is yes, I'm not here for a week for two shows, Wednesdays and Sundays.
But we will be talking about the games on Tuesday and Wednesday, so let's have a quick look ahead. On Tuesday, 4:45, so just as you'll be finishing work, maybe not one to get out early for, Canada-Romania.
Now, this will probably be mean to anyone?
This will probably be a very close game.
Yeah.
Both will be looking for their first win of the tournament.
Good set pieces. Well, good scrimmaging, at least.
I think Canada will edge that. I think, offensively, they look like they've got... some decent backs.
Yeah.
Does it mean that, is it obviously it's something for third place then? Yeah.
It'd be for fourth.
Fourth,
place.
Yeah.
Oh, right. So it doesn't even matter for qualification.
Assuming that Italy don't win their remaining game, which will be against either Canada or
not Canada. It's Romania.
Yeah.
So Romania could go and beat. If Romania beat Italy in the final game, that to me means Romania should be in the Six Nations and we finally dispense of Italy, who are complete and utter waste of time.
Yeah, but they've got Parisi.
Yeah, but he's going to retire soon. As soon as he's retired, and Barbieri takes
his
shirt, they immediately get relegated.
Yeah. Just shut it down. Shut down all rugby.
Exactly right.
Berlusconi or whoever's in charge. Just shut
interested.
The whole thing down.
They can't be interested.
So, Canada-Romania... both looking for their first win. You mentioned the backs, like DTH Van der Merwe is a class act all round, and obviously Cuddles in the row.
He had a great game last week, didn't he, in fairness?
Against France.
Yeah.
He was awesome. That little clip of him... this is interesting. So did you see the little clip of him sneaking into the French huddle when they were about to call a line out?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Do you know when I last saw that?
Oh, I have seen that.
It was it was last season.
Yeah, hang on.
Was it Leicester or someone?
No.
Oh, I can't remember.
It was Sale versus Clermont, and it was Nathan Hines.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
His former second row partner.
Yeah.
They've both got the same tricks.
Sneaky tricks.
I really like that.
Sneaks.
So then at 8 p.m. another two teams going for their first win. This is 8 p.m. Tuesday. Fiji versus Uruguay.
Right, okay. So I'm going to go with Fiji by a big score. I think
I really feel for Fiji in this World Cup because they've played some fantastic rugby.
I know, they're going to have to go back to the mud huts on shingle beaches.
No, GB,
you know,
insensitive.
Not at all. I just think, you know, if anyone's really lost out from the group of death, it's Fiji.
Yeah.
You know, they've had three real tough games. The scheduling hasn't been easy for them either.
And do you know what else? Fiji and their skill set and what they can do with ball in hand, I think it's going to be far more deadly to Uruguay than anyone else that they've met.
Yeah, potentially. Absolutely. A lot of frustration they'll have as well.
Oh, yeah.
They will just play everything from everywhere. That would be a really good game to watch.
Yeah, it will.
You'll see a lot of tries. Then, Wednesday the 7th, the early evening kickoff, 4:45, is South Africa versus the USA.
Ooh.
Guaranteed for some big hits and that.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
There'll be some big hits, but it should be one-way traffic, I would expect.
Yeah.
It'll be a good test of USA's mettle, but South Africa by 20 or 30 points.
Where do you think South Africa are at now? I mean, obviously they lost to Japan, but they look like they've kicked on from there.
But they've stumbled into their best second row pairing because Matt Field's injured, and their best centre pairing because John de Villiers is injured, and they lose some leadership because of that. But Lou de Jager got man of the match,
and they're not short of leaders either. If you look at the experience they've got, it is jam packed, isn't it?
They've got such a deep playing base, and they're so fanatical about rugby. I really don't see the argument that I know I'm polar opposite to you here, but I don't see what all the fuss is about. Experience. I don't think it makes that much of a difference. If you're good enough, you're good enough. It's about having your best 15, not your most experienced 15.
The one thing I'd say about experience is certain times, I would imagine at test level, I think we saw it with England last week, that if you haven't got that experience of grinding out wins or coming very close and just nipping the right result, if you haven't got that experience to draw on, I think, you know, it can be tough, and it's the most brutal arena, isn't it? Test match rugby.
Yeah.
I mean, even the Welsh...
I think you have to have a balance.
That finished the game, okay? Yeah. Had inexperienced players all over the park. Now, Dan Biggs is a great player. He's showing what a fantastic talent he is. Not that many caps. Gareth Davis, not very many caps. Lloyd Williams, not many caps.
No.
Rhys Priestland, say no more.
But they've all been around the setup
and you've got
a good amount of time.
You've got guys like Alan Wynne-Jones.
Yeah.
The back row have all been on a Lions tour. They're all approaching 50 caps. Jamie Roberts as well. The experience and leadership. And George North. George North, 50 caps at 23, including a successful Lions tour.
Yeah.
So he's not old, but he's got a hell of a lot of experience.
Tell you the one person I wouldn't want to be now. I wouldn't want to be probably the only man on the planet to have one up on Israel Folau and play him next week.
But Wales, going back to that, Wales still draw on the 2011 experience of that defeat to France when Warburton got sent off. They still talk about that. It still galvanises the squad, and it's still something they look back on. They know how hurt they were. So if we're talking about England, that's one thing that they will all be able to draw on, how soul searching this week will be for them and the coming months, you know, because those players will react. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to go and see England go and win a Grand Slam at this Six Nations, because Wales did it in 2012 on the back of the 2011 World Cup. You know, the mark of the English squad now moving forward is how they're going to react to this.
Mm. Well, is it? I mean, no, I think they need a complete rebuild.
Not in the players.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying under different management. I mean, do you think there's an argument, Phil, for giving Lancaster the Six Nations?
No.
Going out and finding the right coach. It's got to be. The next appointment is critical.
Do you know what happened last time, though?
No.
They said, we're going to give someone an interim position and we're going to go out and find the right coach.
Yeah.
They gave it to the interim guy.
Yeah.
Actually, you might go on something there.
Yeah.
Let him be the interim. But I think he's going to resign anyway.
I agree, actually. So it's probably a redundant.
Give it to Farrell for a few weeks.
I think it's got to be one or the other. My choice would be basically get rid of virtually all the coaching team. Maybe keep Mike Catt, but I'd get rid of the rest of them and bring in a full new team. That's what I'd do.
I think there is an argument to keep the whole coaching team, or certainly keep Lancaster and let him build it. If he's got issues with Farrell, let him bring someone else in. There is an argument to say, well, he's head coach, he will learn from this undoubtedly and build for the next 4 years, but you've got to make one decision or the other before the Six Nations.
It pains me to say it, but there's one Englishman who I think would fit the bill, whether that's on his own or whether that's alongside another head coach. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Sean Edwards?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you reckon he's got it as a head coach?
Not as a head coach, but he could be... If you had not Clive Woodward, but someone along those lines with Edwards underneath. Edwards is, I think, quality through and through. His record with Wasps and Wales...
Do you not think the game's got past Edwards by a little bit?
No, not at all. I don't.
I kind of think of Edwards as like Gatland's right-hand man. But Gatland didn't even take him on the Lions tour. And, you know, he keeps on popping up here and there like 2 days a week with London Welsh. And it just feels to me like he's a little bit of a nomad. And he could do with re-establishing himself at club level before taking on a big international job. But I could be wrong.
I think that would be a good... If he wants to be an international head coach, he should go to a Premiership club, head coach there for a few years.
He wasn't even head coach at Wasps.
He was defence coach, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He built their blitz defence.
Now, I'm pretty sure if they went Malander, I've just had this thought now. Malander's best mate, of course, is Steve Diamond. Done.
Because they both hate Cockerell.
The brains trust.
No, because they came up together in Sale.
Ah, right. Okay.
And then so like I think they both got experience in like Russia, and I think. So I know that they're fairly close.
Do they both like Alsatians?
They must do, yeah. I think that's nailed on.
Something like that could work, but I just feel England need someone like a Gatland or a Jake White or a Jones, someone like that to oversee the whole thing.
With like high calibre international performance.
Absolutely.
And there's one last game on Wednesday that we've not yet talked about, and it is Namibia versus Georgia. Now it's the two most influential captains in world rugby, well, maybe two of the three, with Parise as the third, but Jacques Berger for Namibia and Mamuka Gorgodza.
They should just dispense with the rugby and let those two captains go at it in, in the centre circle.
Off the game.
Yeah,
that'd be a hell of a fight.
Oh, my money would be on Mamuka.
No.
It's the staying power of Berger, though. He just—how could you put him down?
It'd be like Rocky, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
First hour is all good.
Yeah,
and the next two.
It would be like.
Yeah,
I love seeing Gorgodza, you know, getting Man of the Match awarded to him, and just did you
was
see him?
It was,
yeah, against the All Blacks, he was so humble, wasn't he, on the sidelines, and obviously really touched. That was a. It was a great moment in this World Cup, I thought.
Yeah, it's probably my favourite moment so far. That and the last Japan try. Oh, hang on.
The Japan win is just... It'll take a lot to beat that ever for me, I think.
Personally,
that is
maybe...
The emotion of that.
That is right up there with 2003 for me. Like the emotion I felt after that game was unparalleled.
Yeah. As a Welsh fan, I was pretty high after the victory last Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure which. That just shows the quality of this World Cup. I know Tim wants to go on about how it's the best World Cup of all time, but I have to agree with him.
Yeah.
Just brilliant.
I mean, England might not have delivered on the pitch, but as a country, supporting this World Cup and the venues have been first class. I actually thought it'd have the same galvanising effect as sort of the Olympics did in 2012.
Yeah.
And there's an argument to say the pressure actually got to the England players.
No, their terrible coaching team did.
I think the pressure did.
Yeah, the record defeat, I mean...
About the Olympics, like walking around London yesterday, there's loads of people from every nation. You saw every nation's rugby jersey as you walked around, and people just, like, chatting to people.
That's brilliant.
We had loads of people just saying, oh, because both me and Claire were wearing England shirts. Are you going to the game tonight? Like, what do you expect? That kind of stuff.
I watched the Georgia game in a pub in Didsbury, and a friend of mine who plays rugby but obviously doesn't watch much of it said in a very confident tone, and a very dismissive tone. Do you think that you could get in the Georgia team?
To you?
I was like, oh, are you mental? And literally about 10 seconds after that, the Georgian fullback scored that try.
Lee Halfpenny?
Lee Halfpenny. I was like, no, I could not get in the Georgia team. I couldn't even get in the Georgia third team if they had one.
Three years ago, you say that though, 3 years ago, we played, RGC played Georgia at Arias Park.
Really?
Yeah. Good gods, I definitely wasn't playing.
Thank God.
It was 30-odd points to 10, I think, something.
What,
it was,
no. Oh, right.
We lost, but it wasn't as far-fetched as you think. But, again, we mentioned it last week, but the level that the third-tier nations are at now.
They brought over any of the top 14 props and that kind of thing.
Yeah, French players would have all been contracted, wouldn't they?
But when was that? Was that during the international windows?
Yeah, autumn. In the autumn, I think 3 seasons ago.
What, as an actual game or just a behind-the-scenes?
No, an actual, friendly.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a fixture to play in. Just on the attire, when we went to Twickenham yesterday, I gave Claire one of my old England shirts to wear, and I didn't tell her what else to wear. She'd never been to Twickenham before, so she didn't know what to wear. But somehow she miraculously turned up in a barber jacket.
Perfect.
And maroon chinos.
Well played.
It's like it's in her DNA or something.
Excellent. Right, well, let's leave it there until Wednesday.
Thank you, JB.
And thank you very much again, guys.
Cheers, Bryn. Always a pleasure.
Follow us on Twitter or on the Acast app, and we'll be with you next Wednesday and I think next Sunday. Goodbye, guys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.